Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Illinois, Friday, January 20th, Inauguration Day. Along with Max Armstrong and some other special guests, I'm Orion Samuelson here for our weekly get-together, and I'm going to begin this week's broadcast with an editorial comment. After watching the inauguration and the parade and all of that today, I'll direct my editorial comment to the anti-Trump protesters. Stop burning cars and breaking store windows. The election is over. A protest won't change it. And instead of destroying, start working to get your person elected in 4 years. End of comment. But something else significant happened today, because the rally on Wall Street is the first time in more than 50 years that a new commander-in-chief has been welcomed by a rising stock market on his first day in office. Modest increases today, but a broad-based advance as Donald Trump took the oath of office. And in his speech, of course, the president said U.S. policy will be to buy American and hire American, reiterating what he had said many times during this campaign for the White House. But it does make people in agriculture a little bit nervous when he continues his discussion on trade and trade agreements. Now, the first day aside, the coming month may not be as easy. The S&P 500 has fallen by a median 2.75% in the month after each new president has taken the keys to the White House since Herbert Hoover in January of 1929. And there was a downside, at least for one company, because Trump did have an impact on the value of Kansas City Southern. It went up 4% as it reported a lower quarterly net profit that missed Wall Street estimates, but it still moved higher for the day. Among other gainers today, Merck up 3.6%, and about 6.6 billion shares changed hands on U.S. exchanges. And despite Inauguration Day, that's a little higher than the daily average for the past 20 trading days. We'll talk about agricultural trade just a little bit later, but today, as we look at the activity on Wall Street, we also turn our attention to the activity in the oil market. Oil prices rose more than 2% today on expectations that this weekend's meeting of the world's top oil producers would demonstrate compliance to the global output cut deal, but it would also find rising U.S. drilling activity limiting gains. Members of the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries and some other producing countries, including Russia, were meeting in Vienna this weekend to establish a mechanism to verify compliance with the deal to cut $1.8 billion barrels per day of output. Today, Brent crude up $1.33, ending the week at $55.49, and U.S. crude today up $1.05 at $52.42 a barrel. But for the week, both contracts were largely unchanged. And then let's look at the week on Wall Street, because here are the numbers. We ended today with the Dow at 19,827. It gained 95 points today. The S&P 500 ended the week at 2271, up 7 points for the day. The NASDAQ up 15 points for the day at 55.55. And VIX, the volatility index at the CBOE, down 1.25 points at 11.54. So for the week, the S&P down 0.15%, the Dow down 0.29%, and the NASDAQ down 0.33%. So for the week, indeed, it was a down week on Wall Street. But I don't know about you, but after 3.5 years of name-calling and campaigning and conventions and an election, it is over maybe for another 5 or 6 months. Who knows when the next campaign will get underway. Okay, next week, of course, Commander-in-Chief will be starting to come through perhaps on some of the items he wants to deal with early in his presidency. But it'll be a busy week in the business world as well. Not only will we get commodity prices and stock prices, but we'll be taking a look at several government reports. U.S. gross domestic product estimate for the fourth quarter will come out on Friday. On Tuesday, we'll get data that analysts say will show that existing home sales went down 1.1% to an annual rate of 5.5 million units in December. And then on Thursday, new single-family home sales data expected to show that new home sales went down 1% to an annual rate of 586,000 units last month. Other data from the Commerce Department on Friday expected to show that durable goods orders went up 2.6%. And so it will be a fairly busy week for reports from government agencies. But the busyness next week will be in earnings reports, because we're going to hear from McDonald's and 3M and Verizon and Travelers and Johnson & Johnson, DuPont, Boeing, United Technologies, followed by Intel Corporation, Microsoft Corporation, and Chevron, all reporting this week. And some of what the analysts are expecting: 3M expected to report higher profit and revenue. Verizon, the number one U.S. wireless carrier, expected to report its third straight decline in quarterly revenue. And property and casualty insurer Travelers expected to report a decline in profit, mainly because of being hit by claims paid out to those affected by Hurricane Matthew. And as the first large U.S. drug maker to issue its fourth quarter report, the focus on Johnson & Johnson results will be on how the Band-Aid maker intends to navigate through the era of President Donald Trump. And AT&T is expected to post an increase in fourth quarter revenue as the largest U.S. TV provider looks to close its $85.4 billion acquisition of Time Warner. That's all expected to happen soon. And so while the investor earnings reports will be scrutinized for what they did income-wise, it'll also be taking a look at the impact of some of these proposed mergers and acquisitions that will be taking place. And the number one weapons supplier, that's Lockheed Martin Corporation, expected to report higher revenue for the fourth quarter, helped by increased sales from the F-35 program. However, the F-35, Pentagon's costliest arms program currently, has drawn fire from President Donald Trump, and so they will get a close look on the earnings report to see if that's had any kind of impact, at least thus far. Another bellwether stock is Caterpillar. Construction and mining equipment expected to report lower revenue for the fourth quarter on Thursday. Ford Motor Company will report fourth quarter and full year earnings for the year 2016 on Thursday. Ford has said profit would improve in 2018, but in 2017, the company would be pressured as it increased spending on emerging opportunities that would include self-driving cars and an increase in other costs. Fiat Chrysler Automobiles will also report earnings the same day. And then American Airlines Group will be reporting its fourth quarter earnings. And that'll come a day after Southwest Airlines issues its quarterly profit. Oh, and the nation's biggest home builder, D.R. Horton, will report on Tuesday, expected to report higher revenue and profit for the first quarter, thanks to an increase in home sales. So a lot of activity. And other names, we said McDonald's Corporation, expected to show a decline in fourth quarter revenue as the U.S. restaurant industry continues to raise prices to combat minimum wage increases. So a lot to look at, a lot of the stock earnings reports that could have an impact on the market as we go through the first full week of the term of President Donald Trump. Well, commodities do have concerns, definitely, with the trade situation that we keep hearing about. Whether or not the words being expressed will lead to action, we'll again have to wait and see. But to talk markets, Max Armstrong, who did ride in the inaugural parade today, hope you saw him in that red tractor as the Rural Tractor Brigade made its way down Pennsylvania Avenue. And in a moment or two, Max Armstrong will sit down and he'll visit with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services when we continue on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Greg Groh joining us this weekend from Archer Financial Services. And much of this week, there was reaction and talk about the latest government numbers. We knew it would be a big download in the January reports. And that did have a little bit of a tail as far as the soybean market was concerned.
Well, it sure did, Max. And, you know, like we usually see with the USDA, we sometimes get surprises. And the trade was very much thinking that the final soybean yield was actually going to go up a couple tenths of a bushel. And, in fact, it went down. It carved 40 million bushels or so off the balance sheet and set in motion a good rally in the market. So, and at the same time, we did see some weather issues start to sprout up. While Brazil is holding very strong with crop potential, things have gone the other way in Argentina. Too dry in some spots, too wet in other spots, and they're a major player. And so the combination of the USDA report and South American weather gave the market something that it didn't have before.
Wouldn't that be something if Argentina helped us out two seasons in a row? When have we last seen that?
It would be very interesting, and as you know, Argentina is a major supplier of value-added soy products, i.e. Meal and oil that they export into the global market, and that has caused some concern. The global soybean supply looks to stay relatively high, but getting the products where they need to be has created some urgency in the market.
Chinese demand. We grew a little bit concerned about that toward the end of December as it appeared export numbers were falling off. What have we seen here in the early days of January now?
Well, they were absent from the market until just the last couple of days. They did come in and buy a couple of cargoes, probably because of the market reaction to the crop report and the weather situation. Whether or not they turn, continue to be a major buyer here at this time of year will be very interesting to watch. And I think a lot of that has to do with, what we see in South American weather.
Corn, we gather there's little to be excited about at the moment.
It's tough. The market is well supplied globally. Demand is a little bit on the soft side, and farmers are holding a lot of the crop. And so on rallies that occur in the market, we do see enough cash movement in the market to keep the trend mostly sideways right now.
I saw an interesting comment during the week from the president of the Mexican Corn Growers Association, who said because of the weakness of the peso, and, of course, we've seen the dollar very strong, that their costs of production are up substantially. I think he used a number somewhere in the neighborhood of 40% is how much their cost of production have risen. And he said because of that, their production would be down and their imports of corn, mainly from the United States, would be up. It's a reminder that that is an important market just south of the border.
It's a good reminder of that, and it's also a good reminder of how currency fluctuation impacts the market for producers and users around the globe at times.
And generally speaking, it hurts our exports.
Certainly the strength in the dollar, recent strength to multi-year highs, could be looked at it in that fashion. But interestingly, when I review livestock or meat exports and the grain business so far, we really haven't seen a big impact, but that could become an addis a little bit later in the year.
You and I talked a little bit off the air about energy policy and how much that really matters to farmers, and we are not sure the direction that the energy policy in the Trump administration will take, especially with an EPA administrator moving in from oil country of the United States. Will the market become growingly concerned about that, or has the export business for ethanol and the byproducts picked up enough to take off some of the slack and some of the worry?
That's helpful, but as you watched, you've already seen some trade initiatives with China slapping prohibitive duties on the imports of DDGs and recently ethanol. So it's going to be interesting to watch. Trade wars are never very good for agriculture in general.
The North American Free Trade Agreement has been talked about so much in recent months. Generally speaking, that's been good for American farmers. I guess some of the fruit and vegetable producers would argue against that, but generally, we've benefited, have we not?
Certainly. I think some of our largest traders have been Canada and Mexico and ag products throughout this NAFTA time. I know that it's going to be looked at. Surely wouldn't want to see any major disruptions coming from a review of NAFTA, as it has been very positive for trade across the Americas.
The National Ag Outlook Conference always comes early in the year, but prior to that, we get a pretty good download of data, assumptions, trend lines, that sort of thing, before the actual conference.
We did. You see a budget conference they go through at the end of December where they throw out some very preliminary acreage assumptions and demand assumptions based on their need to construct budgets over the next 4 to 5 years. And they threw out some numbers right at the end of the year. The market will be very closely attuned to the Outlook Conference in late February to see if the thinking remains the same. But generally, we're looking at a drop in corn acres. The question is how much, and we're looking at a sharp increase in, at least an assumption of a big increase in bean acres, and the question is going to be how much. And as we know, a lot of things take place between now and planting season that help make that decision.
And when will you start to pay attention on weather for the planting season ahead, and perhaps watching weather a little closer in some of those dry grain-producing regions, such as, for example, eastern Colorado?
Those will be very interesting. That's a very good question. As we go into February, we start to see people starting to move in the southeastern portion of the United States. Luckily, we've had a good recharge of moisture across that region after a dry fall that had developed. Also, we've seen some good moisture just recently come into the hard red winter wheat belt in the south that had turned kind of dry. Kind of hard to see any major weather events shaping up right now, but to your question, the question of acres starts to come into play by late February as planting starts in March across some of the southeastern regions.
Have you heard a little chatter yet about dry weather for the growing season ahead? Some people are starting to beat that drum. I mean, we saw that a year ago. Some of these winter producer meetings, they trot out a meteorologist.
Well, last year, you know, it was the coming La Nina that was going to upset things and create possible drought conditions. And as you and I know, it didn't quite develop that way, and record yields came. Right now, we don't have a real good forecast of any guiding weather phenomenon. In other words, we don't have an El Nino or a La Nina. It looks like we're going to go into summer with what I would call a neutral type of a situation, so it's hard to make those predictions. And right now, I think the longer-term National Weather Service forecasts look kind of neutral, with equal chances of moisture and temperature across a broad swath of major growing regions. But as you know, that'll become much more of a factor as they update those forecasts going into spring, and any hint of any type of a weather phenomenon that would be restrictive on yield potential could be quickly become a market factor.
Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, President Trump kept us waiting until the last day before his inauguration. But then we did get a Secretary of Agriculture, the last cabinet officer to be appointed by the president. The appointed Secretary of Agriculture, well, as far as I know, for the first time in history, we will have a licensed veterinarian sitting in the office of the Secretary of Agriculture, because Sonny Perdue is a licensed veterinarian, And I've had several people ask me if he is related to the Purdue chicken family in the East Coast, and I haven't been able to find any relationship there from the standpoint of family. But Sonny Perdue was elected to two terms of governor of Georgia, a leading producer of cotton and peanuts, serving from 2003 to 2011. Before that, he was a state senator representing a rural swath of the state about 100 miles south of Atlanta. But since agriculture is very geographical in his thinking and nature, not everybody applauded the appointment. All of the farm organizations did, of course, because you don't want to get the new secretary mad at you by saying bad things about him at the very outset. But Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican from the top corn and soybean state of Iowa, tweeted, "Well, I'm interested in how Midwest Ag will have a seat at the table." Because Georgia accounted for just 2% of total U.S. agricultural exports in the year 2015. And in overall agricultural income, Georgia accounts for just 2%. Georgia ranks 15th among all the states in the value of its production, generating a little over $9 billion in commodity receipts in the last year. But there's always that geographical question. You know, even in the Farm Bureau, where Southerners seem to control the presidency most of the time, in the Department of Agriculture, the Midwest seems to control the secretary's office most of the time. You have to go back, 25 years since the last Southerner was named Secretary of Agriculture. And that was the Mississippi Democratic Congressman Mike Espy, who was appointed by President Bill Clinton and ran into some troubles on ethics and did not spend much time in the office. But I've never met Sonny Perdue, and I, in Phoenix earlier this month, sat down and talked with the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, also from Georgia, Zippy Duval, and I asked Mr. Duval to tell me about the newly named Secretary of Agriculture.
Well, Governor Perdue, he and I got to know each other when I was president at Georgia Farm Bureau. I remember him saying many times in front of our leaders there that as long as I'm governor, the farmers can come through the front door. They don't have to come through the back door. And he governed that way. He understood that agriculture was the largest industry in Georgia. Every trade mission he went on, he took agricultural people with him. He was very successful in promoting the products that we grew. He was also successful in bringing a lot of jobs to Georgia on those trade missions. So he was a great administrator. He took care of the state's budget, so he's a good administrator. He was a veterinarian by trades, really? Which makes him a scientist. So he understands sound science, and that's what we want to drive all our policy, sound science. So, you know, if you look at Sonny Perdue, and the president has interviewed some outstanding people, and we would be honored to work with any of them. But if you look at Sonny Perdue, he's got a lot of the good ingredients, and I don't think agriculture would be disappointed one bit if he got the calling.
Final question. Is it true you're going to drive a tractor in the inaugural parade?
Well, that's what I hear, that that's going to be a possibility that I might do that. And that's pretty exciting.
Well, Max Armstrong has been invited as well,
okay.
So we're very excited about that. I don't know what color tractor you'll be on, Zippy, but he'll be on a red tractor in case I age.
Well, I grew up on blue, and I drive green now, so.
Okay.
And they're both great tractors.
Zippy Duval, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, and not only assessing Sonny Perdue, the new Secretary of Agriculture, but talking about tractors and the color of tractors, and I hope you were able to see that at least agriculture did get a spot in the inaugural parade. Well, there are concerns, of course, with the Trump administration, and much of that is because of his position on trade. And today, the president said trade strategy will be to protect American jobs, and it will start with withdrawal from the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement that all of agriculture wanted. Tom Vilsack, former Secretary of Agriculture, wanted it, and our special trade representative's office wanted it, and I think most farm organizations also wanted to see the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement become reality. But the statement by the president is now committed to renegotiating another trade deal, the North American Free Trade Agreement. That's NAFTA. That was signed into law in 1994 by President Bill Clinton. It covers the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, and it seems to me that all three countries have benefited, particularly agriculture, has benefited from NAFTA. But again, the statement by the president said, as a result of these agreements, blue-collar towns and cities have watched their factories close and good-paying jobs move overseas, while Americans face a mounting trade deficit and a devastated manufacturing base. And the statement went on to say that tough and fair agreements on trade could grow the U.S. economy and return millions of jobs to America. The statement concluded by saying the strategy starts by withdrawing from the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement. And he also talked about hitting China with some of the restrictions on trade as retaliation for what China has done, maybe overlooking the fact that they are the biggest buyer of U.S. soybeans, and I'd hate to think what could happen to the soybean market in this country if suddenly we got into a trade war with China and they decided to retaliate by taking action against our soybeans. Another China situation here that we can talk about. China National Chemical Corporation, known to us as ChemChina, said today that it has asked for the U.S. antitrust regulators' approval for its planned $43 billion acquisition of Swiss company, crop protection and seed maker Syngenta. And the ChemChina spokesman said, we believe the U.S. antitrust process is on track, and they think it will become reality. Part of that is that a very small part of the annual income of ChemChina comes from sales here in the United States. And one other China note, you know, they have more hogs in the country of China than any other country in the world, but they reported this week that the output of pork in 2016 in that country fell 3.4% a year-on-year basis to its lowest level since 2011. But on the other hand, production of beef hit a decade high after low milk prices prompted farmers to slaughter more dairy cattle. But pork output in the world's top producer and consumer of the meat fell to 52.9 million tons for the year after farmers cut back their herds following months of losses in previous years. Well, where will we start market-wise on Monday at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange? Because we are getting back to full trading week again after the Martin Luther King observance this week. So where do we start on Monday? In livestock trade, February lean hogs will start the week at $65.30 a hundredweight after dropping 30 cents today. February live cattle at $120.25, and they dropped 87 cents a hundredweight today. On the other hand, January feeder cattle up $1 a hundredweight, ending and starting Monday at $133.10. Grain market. Well, a mixed close today, and we find the March wheat contract will start Monday at $4.28 a bushel after gaining 4.75 cents today. March corn, 3.69 3/4 after gaining 3.75 cents. And then March soybeans will start the new week at $10.67 after dropping 2.5 cents today. Well, our time is up. The inauguration is over. You all have a good weekend and a good week ahead next week. And thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong and yours truly, Orion Samuelson, on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.